Hey, folks, and welcome back to another episode of Get Wrecked, the only podcast anywhere in the world where two buds take turns recommending and reviewing some of their favorite pop culture hits, hidden gems, and oddities. I'm, of course, your host and resident silly boy Thor, joined today, as always, by my friend and co-host. Some call him the Lord of Blood, some call him the Omen King, but I just call him the Elden Lord. It's Micah.
Hey, what's going on? Oh, boy, oh boy, Thor, am I excited to talk about this episode.
Yeah, I know, me too.
I'm so excited. I'm so excited, and I feel like we have so much to discuss that I don't even know if we need a preamble. I don't even know if we need to jib-jab for a little bit ahead of time.
No, I doubt it.
Unless you have something. Do you have something?
Not particularly, except for, so we're going to be talking Elden Ring today.
We are
specifically Shadow of the Erdtree. We both beat it.
Mm-hmm.
And I know I said I'm probably not going to play it for a while after I beat it.
Yeah.
But I already started working on my next build. So I haven't started New Game Plus yet, but okay. I started collecting pieces for my next build.
Okay. So you're going to do New Game Plus and then do your next build on that?
Yeah, well, I already switched to it. I'm just kind of going through and getting the pieces and just like finishing up a couple things.
Okay.
Like random bosses and like getting talismans and stuff from the base game.
Sure.
So I'm going with like a... I don't love faith builds. I never really have.
Okay.
But I'm going with... I am going with a faith build, but it's going to be... like dexterity and faith for okay. like a lightning mage.
Ooh, okay.
Yeah.
So are you using any of the Death Knight weapons?
Yeah. The Death Knight twin blades are fucking insane.
Insane.
Dude, it's so cool because it like blink bolts you there.
Okay.
And then you use a heavy attack and it does this crazy lightning spinning attack with the axe.
Oh, yeah.
It's fucking dope. It's cool as hell. And I'm also using because it's Dex and Faith, Mesmer Spear too. So I'm gonna be like a fire and lightning guy.
Ooh, that'll be
like
cool.
Mostly lightning, but Mesmer Spear is pretty cool too.
One of my main builds that I've got two characters that I've gone through, and the first character I wanted to just have a whole bunch of status effects. So yeah. I made a build that did Scarlet Rot and Bleed and Poison all at the same time. And that's a lot of fun. With my second build, I did purely a faith build. But yeah. I really wanted to focus on the fundamentalist incantations. So that use both faith and intelligence.
Okay, yeah.
So I did that for my second playthrough. And that's a really like quality build. Like it's not good at all until you hit like 150.
Yeah.
You know, because you need so many points.
In faith and intelligence. Yeah. Is that, that's just like a pure caster probably then, yeah? Or is that the guy you're doing the like monk skills?
Oh,
with?
No, that's my first build. So yeah, I ended up doing the dry leaf arts, the punchy kicky, the monk stuff with my first character. And I actually respec'd both of those so that they would be bleed based as well.
Okay.
So now I've just went all in on bleed based with that guy.
Eh, never a bad idea.
Yeah, right? Bleed's a lot of fun. And I've been grabbing a bunch of weapons that just do bleed damage and playing around with them. Like, I grabbed the two twins that are the, like, knights. So one of them, they're both related to the Fingers dude.
Yeah.
What was his name? His name was...
Ymir, like that.
Yeah. So the one that invades you when you go to fight Metter.
Yeah.
She has claws.
Yes.
And so I've been using those because the...
Dude, claws are fun.
Yeah, they're really fun. And the R2 on that tosses claws, like it throws. So it's got a projectile with it. And then the L2, the Ash of War, just does a wide projectile of
that's
claws.
Cool. Yeah, I have those. I thought about like using them.
They're pretty fun.
On my the first time I did the Spellblade build, I used claws.
Okay.
And... so I would use magic armament, so they were like glowing fucking Wolverine claws.
That's
and
cool.
I would just
and mess
then I
things
put,
up.
Then I put Bloodhound Step on them, so I would just like hop around and just chop the shit out of people.
Sure. I found, so there's some there are some boots or some like greaves, I guess, leggings armor that you can wear that will actually increase the damage of your kicks. And it's one of those like eagle warriors that you fight against.
Okay, yeah.
So the feet have talons.
Oh, what?
Yeah, the feet have talons on them in the armor. So when you wear that, it increases the damage of your kicking and stomping attacks. So I did that with the martial arts that is mainly kicking.
Okay.
And then set that to bleed, and it just wrecked things. So that's my second character that I defeated the game or the DLC with. And I woke up one morning, Thor. It might have been yesterday, or it might have been the day before. One of those 2 days. I woke up and I'm like, I haven't beat Radahn yet. Spoiler alert, folks. We're going to be talking all about Elden Ring. And the final boss of the game is Radahn. And if that means something to you, I'm sorry. If it doesn't mean anything to you, why are you here?
Fair enough.
Except if you want to listen to our sultry voices, I guess that's a good reason to be here too. But anyway, so I was like, I haven't beat Radahn yet. So I jumped in, and within like 3 tries, I wrecked him.
Nice.
With a bleed build. And then I realized, oh, I haven't fought Bale yet. So I went and fought Bale. It didn't even die. I just murdered Bale. And then I was like, oh, I haven't fought Metter yet. So I went and fought Metter. Didn't even die.
This is with the kicking guy?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It just wrecked these bosses. And I remember thinking, I was having a lot of trouble with my other character. Like, with specifically Radahn, obviously. And yeah. And Metter wasn't too
bad. Which one is Metter?
Metter is the mother of fingers.
Oh, okay. Yeah, right on.
Yeah. So yeah, we're talking Shadow of the Erdtree specifically today, folks. I don't know if Thor said that, but I'm just so excited.
Yeah, let's get into it. We were talking about our characters. Now let's actually talk about the game.
Yeah.
Hey, folks, make sure to stay up to date on all the latest episodes by following us at Get Wrecked Podcast on Instagram and Facebook. Or if you have any recommendations you'd like to hear us review on the show, you can contact us directly via email. Or, I don't know, maybe you just want to send us some feet pics. You creep, I don't know what you're into. I don't care. We'll review those too. What do you think of that, huh? In any case, all your requests, feedback, and general criticism of the straight white patriarchy can be sent to getwreckedpod@gmail.com. That's GITRECDPOD@gmail.com. Now, back to the show.
All right, folks. Not much of an introduction today. We are talking about Shadow of the Erdtree, a recent downloadable content expansion for the highly loved game Elden Ring. If you're any type of gamer at all, I'm sure that you've heard of this. If you're not a gamer, I'm going to try and include things into this that might interest you as to maybe why you should play this game. If you're not a gamer at all, then this might not be an episode for you, as much as I hate to say that.
Yeah.
Stick around. All right. We'll try and make it entertaining, but we are going to talk deep about this game, episode.
We're going to get into details and nitty gritty. So yeah. If you haven't played Elden Ring, go fucking play it. Buy a PlayStation 5 or 4 or an Xbox or Steam on your computer, whatever it is. Go play Elden Ring.
Maybe that's where we start this conversation. All right. So let's say that we have people who have never heard of the game. Maybe they're kind of iffy on getting into a video game. Why would we want to play this game? So, as far as coming from somebody who plays a fair amount of video games, myself, talking to somebody who doesn't play any video games at all. This company, From Software, has a big reputation of being fairly challenging, at least in the games that they make. And yeah. I'll say that they are fairly challenging. But this one is the most accessible one out of all the ones that they've made, at least in my opinion. And I can tell you that there is a lot to be said for having a really challenging game and then figuring out the puzzle to make it not as challenging and then defeating all of these grand epic bosses through that. Because at first, I feel like a lot of this feels unfair. Like you go into a boss and it just wrecks you in 2 hits.
Yeah. Well, and for me, I never played any of the Souls games or Bloodborne. That's not true. I played the first Dark Souls game.
Okay.
Because everybody said how good it was and how hard it was and how cool it was. I played it for about an hour and I hated it and never picked it back up.
Yeah.
Because I just didn't enjoy it. I was like, it's too hard. And I've always said, I don't think something simply being hard makes it worth doing.
Sure.
And so I was willing to give Elden Ring a try. And the reason why was because I had heard that they had taken a lot of inspiration from Breath of the Wild.
Yeah. Yeah, and I had heard that too.
As far as the open world nature of it. And I was like, well, I love Breath of the Wild. And I watched some of the gameplay and I was like, okay, it looks pretty cool. I almost stopped playing Elden Ring after the first few hours for the same reason, was like, it was too hard. It doesn't really tell you what's going on.
Right.
It doesn't give you a lot of, like, what's going on. But I just kept kind of plugging away, and I started with one character, and after a few hours of just dying and hating it, I tried a different character, and it just happened to be a play style that I liked better, and I actually was able to use it to find ways to kill things and not just die immediately.
Yeah.
And then that's what got me hooked.
Yeah.
So it definitely, Elden Ring still has a pretty high learning curve, especially if you're not familiar with any Souls games.
Sure, I would agree.
But it just, it's so rewarding. Like all that, the difficulty, like once, as you learn and get better, like it's so rewarding when you actually do complete challenges. And there's no difficulty setting. Because I'll be the first person to admit, on some games I've played, I get to a part and it gets too hard, and I change the difficulty setting so I can get past it.
Sure.
And with Elden Ring, you can't do that.
Nope.
You just got to get better.
Yeah.
You got to just keep trying and get better.
Yeah. Where this, though, is much more approachable is that because it's open world, there are very few bosses that you have to fight in this game. And with that being said, there are a ton of bosses in this game. But if you want to go through the main game, there's only like four that you really have to beat to progress. Yeah. Four or five. So with many of the bosses, if you go there and you're like, this is too much, you can just turn around and go in another direction and explore somewhere else. Most of the FromSoft games, the publishers, From Software, the developer, most of those games, these Demon Souls, Dark Souls, Bloodborne, they're much more linear in their nature. So if you hit a boss, really you got to get past that boss to progress in the game.
Yeah.
There are a couple of side paths that you can take, but with Elden Ring, they really opened it up. So because of that, it's much more approachable. The cool thing about it is that it's got all these demigods and it's super high fantasy. It's just the story
was written, well, partially written like with George R. Martin.
Yeah.
As far as, so like kind of he did the world building for it.
Yes. And
that's my understanding.
It's he did the world building and then gave it to them. But they purposely took what he made and then distorted everything.
Yeah.
So I think the darling of From Software is this guy named Miyazaki, and he came out and said, I think that George R. R. Martin would be very surprised with what we did with the characters that he created, because he essentially created them and then just gave the game away, or gave the world building away. And this game takes place in a scenario where this whole big cataclysm event has happened, and then your character is jumping in on the tail end of all of that. Anyway, with all that, I think it's time for us to like deliberately jump into the DLC of this.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So this is Shadow of the Erdtree. Thor, how did you feel about the storyline of this, with us just like following Mikkola's footsteps? How did you feel about the way that they took the narrative compared to how the narrative was presented in the base game?
I liked it. It felt much more focused. And I mean, honestly, I was confused at first because I was like, why are they just telling me everything that's going on?
Yeah.
Because typically,
not used to that
with Elden Ring, it's just like you have to read the descriptions of items. And you have to kind of read into stuff, which is one of the cool things of Elden Ring and I'm sure the other Souls games, where like you're intentionally not given all the information so that you're... It's this interesting thing where they kind of let the players build the world a little bit as well, where you have to kind of read into it.
Yeah.
Because nobody ever tells you exactly what's going on. They'll give you an item description.
Yeah.
Or dialogue that's kind of cryptic, but does let you in on stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So it felt weird that they kind of just were telling you exactly what's going on in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
Where I definitely felt confused at first. Like, what is this? I think it was the right call, though.
I do, too.
Because it is a DLC.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's meant to kind of... It does have to shoehorn you a little bit more into exactly what it needs you to do.
Yeah.
But also, I feel like that's a fair criticism of Elden Ring in the first place. Is like, it's this huge open world RPG, and they don't tell you what's going on at all.
Basically at all, yeah.
Where...
Very minimal cutscenes.
Which is kind of funny. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. it's... For most RPGs, it's so story-driven.
Sure.
Where, like, Elden Ring is like, we're just not going to tell you what's going on. You kind of got to figure it out yourself.
Yeah.
So I actually enjoyed it. I really like the story. And I think it's a fucking cool story that it's telling.
I agree. Yeah, I'm in the same boat, dude. It was nice to have the main plot be kind of narrated to you through the characters, because there's a whole group of these characters that you're kind of a part of that are following the footsteps of Mikolo, one of the demigods of the game. And he was a very ominous, ambiguous character in the base game because he essentially was gone for everything. He was just a cocoon at Moog's palace.
Yeah.
So there wasn't too much information about him. There was a lot of mystery as a character. So having him be the focus of this, I thought was pretty cool. And then having all of these characters just following him, I thought was really, really neat. Because they were from all walks of life, right? Like you had Needle Knight Letta and Dryleaf Dane. Those two were just staunch Mikola followers. 100% through and through. But then you've got people like the Horn Scent, and you've got Ansbach, who used to be a follower of Lord Moog. Right. But they're all following Mikola, too. And that was kind of an intriguing thing. And what's the one dude? Is his name Moore, who like collects all the items?
Yeah. Yeah. The collector guy. And then Thalia, the poison guy.
Yeah. So you've got this kind of ragtag group of people. And then eventually you reach a point and it goes boom. And it's like a great rune somewhere has been discarded or destroyed. And with it, an enchantment has been lifted. You know, something like that. And then you realize that, oh, Mikola has enchanted everybody that you're with to essentially do what he wants to do.
Yeah.
And when that enchantment breaks, then all hell breaks loose between all those characters. And they're like, oh, I don't like you.
Yeah, immediately Letta starts getting super paranoid. Like, who should I kill? Which one of these guys who I've been hanging out with? I think I need to kill a couple of them. Which one do you think I should start with?
Yeah, pretty sure not all these people are actually followers of Mikola. I'm pretty sure that they should die. You find out that she's like a zealot, 100%. Yeah. And then you realize that Ansbach had confrontations with Mikola in the past. And probably when he had his confrontation with Mikola, that's when he got turned.
Yeah.
Right, and
they've all just been charmed this whole time.
And you find out that Mikola just has this charm ability that they kind of allude to a little bit in the base game. They kind of allude to it because there's an item that you can get in the base game that lets you charm enemies. And it's like, I think it's called Mikola's Needle or something like that.
Okay, yeah.
But you can hit them with it and then they'll start fighting their enemies. So that's part of the cool storyline or story aspect of the game that I like, where it goes, oh, this item is something that Mikola crafted. And then when you use the item in the game, you realize that they now become your ally when you use it on them and they fight their friends.
Yeah. And so then you have to infer like, oh, Mikola is able to make people your friends when they're not.
Yeah, so there's a lot of subtext that they usually do with the items. I think that that's very, very cool, but I really did appreciate having this main plot line just being like, oh, this is what you're doing. You're following in Mikola's footsteps. But then you've got all of these side stories that they don't come out exclusively.
Yeah, yeah. So that's where kind of the intrigue is built, yeah. Where the actual what you're supposed to be doing is laid out in front of you. And then all that extra stuff is kind of like what we talked about within the base game, where like you have to kind of read into things if you're interested.
Sure. Yeah.
And honestly, I feel like that was almost like them saying, hey, maybe we should have done a little more of this in the base game, with leading you through the base game a little bit more. Because really in the base game, you do get that. But it's just when you look on the map, there are arrows pointing you where to go. Mm-hmm. Like,
that's true. Yeah, the Sights of Grace are just like, go that way.
Go this direction.
Yeah. Yeah, well, and there was a bit of pushback when the game first came out, too, with that. I don't know if you remember it, but because there are NPC storylines in the base game.
Yeah.
And they would just move. Like, you would talk to them, and then they would just vanish and go to another part of the map, but there would be no indicator as to where they went. Yep. And so a lot of people were like, this works for your previous games, because all your other games were linear and we couldn't miss the character on the path. But we don't know where these people are going, and it's a giant open world.
Yeah, well, and I think it still does that, because it doesn't show you on the map where they are until you interact with them, right? Or am I wrong about that?
Well, they didn't show up on the map at all at first. None of it, at all. And then they were like, okay, we'll put indicators as to where they are on the map. Like, that was their, you know, halfway, like, okay, we hear you. We'll put something on
the map. Yeah, but those indicators don't show up until you find them. So if, like, you find somebody and then they move.
Right.
Like, you know they're not there anymore. But you still don't know where they are.
Yeah. Yeah, that is true, I think.
Which, honestly, so if I could go back and do Elden Ring all over again from the very beginning,
mm-hmm.
I actually love that about Elden Ring, is that I would get an actual notebook and write down like dialogue and stuff about characters and make my, because most RPGs you have like a journal.
Oh yeah.
Where you keep notes, you know,
sure.
Like
it logs
mechanically
things.
It logs stuff and it'll show you where stuff is. That's how it makes sense of telling you like, hey, this is where you need to go.
Yeah.
Whereas like Elden Ring doesn't do any of that. It's on you. Where like, once again, if you were actually an adventurer in the world, there's not just some magical thing that takes notes of everything. Like, you got to pay attention to what people say. You got to keep track of what's going on.
You really do need to pay attention to what the people are saying.
If I could go back and experience Elden Ring from the beginning again, I would take a notebook and write down what everybody says.
Sure.
And then try to do it that way. So,
have you seen the sketchbook? There's one person who illustrated their entire Elden Ring playthrough.
No.
And then put their sketchbook online for people to see. It's wild.
Cool.
It's essentially a journal. Of them playing, and they did a whole lot of illustrations.
That's very cool.
Yeah, it's very neat. So last week I mentioned that there was actually some controversy.
Yeah, I was curious about that. What is the controversy?
All right, so the controversy basically was that people were saying that the game was too hard. It's like the game came out again, and everybody's freaking out. Because when the game came out initially, people were like, well, we need an easy mode, or we need a difficulty scaler in this.
Okay.
And FromSoft was like, no, we're not doing that, right? So there was a lot of controversy-ish on that, because Elden Ring is the starting point with these type of games for a lot of people. Like, the amount of sales that Elden Ring got versus the last game like this, which was Dark Souls 3, vastly different. As far as it scaled up exponentially, the amount of people who bought Elden Ring. So the audience is much, much bigger, and generally with a bigger... Oh my gosh, my dog.
Yeah, if you heard a weird sound, that's Micah's dog flapping her ears.
Just continuously. So when this game came out, a lot of people were making fun of game journalists, because the game journalists were coming out and they're like, this is a hard DLC. It's tough. And then all the hardcore get good like Elden Ring and Dark Souls players are like, well, whatever, these game journalists probably just suck at playing Elden Ring and they just need to get good, right? And then the game comes out and so many people are talking about how difficult the DLC is that the whole thing about they really messed up, they just made this too hard on purpose, that it created a bit of a backlash.
Okay, yeah.
So...
okay, so I was aware a little bit of this.
Okay, yeah. So there's this... getting into game mechanics now, we've got these things called Shadow Tree Fragments, which it's spelled S-C-A-D-U.
Skidoo Tree.
Skidoo Tree,
that's
right?
How I prefer to say it. The Skidoo Tree.
So this game uses a whole lot of old English spelling, so I don't know if they try to do it just to be cool or what, but it's supposed to be pronounced Shadow Tree. And you find these fragments that will give a multiplier both to how much damage you do in this new area, because it's a brand new map. This DLC is not connected to the original map. So it gives you a multiplier on how much you do, and it gives you a multiplier on your defense. So it makes it so that the enemies don't do as much damage to you.
Yeah.
And there are 20 different levels that you can hit with this, 20 being the max, and it makes you do like 200% more damage and receive 200% less damage. And that was the way that FromSoft decided to add scaling to this, because the game has been out for 2 years and they didn't want people to go in, like you and I who had beat the game a couple of times, to go in with our high level characters and just wreck through the DLC. So this was their way of making that progression happen again for players who were in end game territory.
Yes. And can I tell, I think it's one of the greatest things about the DLC.
Yeah.
Is the Skidoo Tree fragments, because not, so it does a couple of things. Basically, the number one thing it does is it lets you start leveling up your character. Because once you get past level 150, there's not really, like, there is a difference, but there's not a super huge noticeable difference in most of the game as far as, like, enemies that you meet. So it's like, eventually, once you get to 150, you're basically a fucking superhero.
Yeah.
Except against some of the late game bosses and some of the late game areas.
Yeah, I would say level 100 to 150, there's a much bigger jump in power than level 150 to 200.
Exactly, yeah. So it lets you start leveling up again, which is awesome. You love that. You love that feeling of like, oh, I'm actually getting stronger. I'm like, that's a big part of RPG games specifically.
Mm-hmm.
But it also encourages you to explore. Because the Skidoo Tree fragments are, like, all over the place. You gotta, like, look for them.
Yeah.
And probably my favorite thing about the DLC is it let me experience that experience of discovering Elden Ring for the first time.
Yes.
Because by the time I did the DLC, I had played through the game at least 3 or 4 times.
Sure.
Maybe, like, I maybe started it and didn't actually finish it the whole way, but I've played, like, a number of times, like a couple hundred hours in it. And I always think, like, man, if I could just go back and play through the, like, it's such an exciting time as you discover the world and, like, experience the world for the first time.
I don't think that I've played a game where I have that feeling multiple times ever, except for this game.
Yeah.
Where I'm just like, oh, wow, this game is huge.
So, once again, this was like my 4th or 5th playthrough that I did, because I started a fresh character to go, which I ran through the base game and then got into the DLC. And I've gone back and forth to, like, base game to, like, level up, beat bosses,
sure,
stuff while going through. And then, like we were talking about in the intro, I'm already starting my next character. So in order to do that, I wanted to go back and do some stuff. There were things that I thought I had done, like, basically everything. There were 2 bosses I had never fought that I just went and fought to get, because I'm doing, like, a lightning faith build.
Right.
And so lightning is really, like, associated with dragons in Elden Ring. I had never fought the Dragon Lord in Feram Azula.
Placidusax?
Yep. And I had
like
never
the multi-headed
fought
one?
Yeah. Okay. And I had never fought the Necro Dragon, the Lich Dragon, either in the Deeper Depths.
Yeah.
I didn't even know they existed.
That's so cool.
And why would I needed to have? Because I've always done like dex builds or intelligence dex builds. So I never mess with like lightning stuff. So once I start going down the lightning rabbit hole, I'm like, oh, there's fucking like legendary bosses I had never fought before.
Yeah.
What the fuck?
That's one of my favorite things about the game is there's so much to it that you're not gonna find it on the first playthrough.
Yeah. Or the second or the third. Like you got to play through multiple times.
Yeah.
And many of the things you don't even know unless you look it up, or if you're somebody who has a lot of time to literally scour every inch of the huge fucking map.
You've got to be a certain type of person, though, because I feel like I really scour when I play. Like, my first character, I think it tracks your playtime, right? And I think that my playtime for the first character is 250 hours at this point.
Yeah.
You know, maybe close to 300. That's a lot of time playing this game.
Yes.
With one character. And then I've got my second character who's not as much because that initial playthrough, you're really trying to figure things out, right?
Yeah.
So even with that, I feel like I'm pretty thorough in my, like, moving around and trying to find things. I still miss stuff.
Yeah.
Right? So there, I almost feel like there has to be a bit of luck of, oh, that little area caught my eye. And, oh, hey, look, a cave. And then you go into a cave and you're like, oh, it's not just a cave. It's a whole nother massive area of the map that I haven't reached yet.
So, and fucking Shadow of the Erdtree nails that. That's what I was getting at, is the Skidoo Tree fragments.
Yeah.
It really encourages you to explore and re-experience, like, finding new areas in Elden Ring.
Sure.
And this, the DLC not only does a great job of encouraging that, but it keeps true to the base game where it's like, it's a small map. Like,
ish.
It's a small map physically compared to, like, the base game's map.
Yeah.
But there's so much packed into it.
Yeah, I think
there's
it's more dense.
There's so many little things to find.
Yeah, I also think that there's more verticality in that, too, in the map.
Yes, yeah. There's no underground areas.
No.
But they really played with that concept of, okay, you can be in the same area, and there's, like, three different things based on what level you're at.
Yeah, yeah.
Especially when you get to the Black Keep. I mean, talk about, that's my favorite dungeon in the whole game, when you do the storehouse.
The area where Mesmer's in?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's just like 10 levels or something of...
Yeah, well, and there's a whole area of that castle that you can't enter unless you go in through the back way.
Yeah.
And there's like a whole other entrance to get in there, which is wild to think about. Maybe we get into bosses now. What do you think? Or is there more on the content, like, subject of exploration that you want to cover?
No.
No?
No, I'm pretty good with that.
Okay. Now, I got to wonder, Thor, can you give me, like, a top three as far as your bosses? How do you feel like the bosses compared to the initial game?
So I have some criticism about the bosses. But I definitely liked three that stand out to me immediately. And I'm not including the final boss of Radahn and Mikula fighting together.
Okay.
Which I think is incredible, but also incredibly tough.
That was a really bad fight.
Yeah.
Like, as far as difficult, it was
really
tough.
As far as, like, what I thought, like, thematically and visually and challenge-wise felt really cool, the first one is Mesmer right away.
Yeah.
Because I love, they're kind of building up. Mesmer is like in movies, especially superhero movies, there's always like, you think he's the big bad until you actually find out who the real big bad is.
Oh, yeah.
Mesmer's kind of that guy. They do a great job of, like, you're just trying to beat Mesmer this whole time. So I love the Mesmer fight.
And you realize Mesmer's like halfway through it.
I love the storehouse. Incredible dungeon. I love that, like, you open it and it's like this black room and all the fucking lights come on.
Mm-hmm.
And Mesmer is a really cool character.
Mesmer's awesome.
He is He reminded me a lot of Millennia.
Okay.
As far as like visually. But I like kind of his whole story where like he, do you know his story?
Yeah.
As far as, so what's his whole deal?
So he, there's, so there's a lot of talk as far as where he fits into the timeline of America's Children.
Yeah. Cause he's one of America's Children, right?
Yeah.
And then he like turned away from the gods.
Well.
And that whole shit, right?
So the area that we play in the DLC, the Shadowlands, was separated from the lands between. At least that's the speculation.
Yeah.
That America, the god of the world, cut off the Shadowlands from the lands between.
Basically, and the thinking is like the lands between shine in the light of the Erdtree, whereas the Shadowlands are in the shadow of the Erdtree.
Correct. Yep. Yeah. And you find out that America is from this area. It's from the Shadowlands area. That's where the shaman village that you go to in this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's where America's from. So you get a lock of America's hair there. And then you also get you get an item there as well.
Yeah, yeah.
So you get the spell. Yeah, yeah. The minor Erdtree spell. Which, by the way, the only other person who uses that spell in the entire game is Melina, who is guiding you through the base game. So she'll jump into fights with you. Maybe it was the fight against Godfrey. She'll jump into one of the fights with you. And she casts that spell.
Okay.
Yeah. So anyway, this is where America is from. And basically, from what I gather, America did what she needed to do to ascend to be a god. The horn scent and that whole culture essentially used the shaman and chopped them up into little bits and put them in these jars. And so they're the jar people of this Shadowlands area.
Yeah.
So in retaliation, once America becomes a god, she sends Mesmer, who I believe is her firstborn.
Okay.
And says, go just pillage this place.
Pillage and burn.
Yeah. Yeah, this place. And that's what Mesmer did. So Mesmer went there on behest of his mom, but also took all of the burden of fault on him as well, so that it would kind of relieve her of that entire thing. And then I think that America cut it off, somehow separated that part away from the Shadowlands, away from the actual area of the Erdtree, so that it would essentially be cutting away everything from her past so that the only memory of her is her as a god.
Yeah.
But Mesmer was essentially there, and his order was to just kill everything that wasn't connected to Grace. So the whole Erdtree thing and the Golden Order that she became the head of, anything that wasn't connected to that, Mesmer was told to slaughter and destroy. So he was there essentially waiting for America to like say, okay, you can be done.
Yeah, and then she never returned, and then
yeah,
he got a little bit upset about it.
He gets super upset because you show up, and you're a tarnished, and you're not touched by Grace. And so he's like, you're tarnished. He recognizes you as that. And he goes, how could Mother allow you to become an Elden Lord when you're not touched by Grace? He goes, well, now you're in my house. You're not touched by Grace. I've been ordered to kill everything that's not touched by Grace, so I'm going to kill you.
I'm going to burn your ass.
Exactly. And so that's the whole thing with Mesmer. All right. And then you find out that he has the Abyssal Serpent, locked within him. And you find out that the eyeball that he has is something that Merica created and embedded in him so that it would keep that serpent at bay. And so halfway through the fight, he breaks that, and that's why the whole snake thing starts going nuts.
Yeah, so I love the Mesmer fight. It was really fucking tough.
Yeah.
It was really tough. Liked that fight. I thought cinematically looked really cool.
Sure.
Also, we're talking top three.
Mm-hmm.
And these aren't in a particular order, and the next one I really liked was Bale.
Bale was awesome.
And you and I killed Bale on my game.
Yeah.
And, I mean, we wrecked him pretty fucking quick.
We did. We did.
He was not as tough as I expected.
I had trouble with
that. I thought online. Visually and thematically, it was fucking incredible. Because my biggest complaint about dragon fights through Elden Ring, as well as Shadow of the Erdtree, is dragons are supposed to be like right below gods, basically. Right. And oftentimes they feel not that interesting of fights. That one felt the way you think a dragon fight should feel.
Agreed, yeah.
Where like he's just raining fire down on you, and it's very... Compared to every other fight in the DLC and the base game, incredibly cinematic. So I liked that fight just solely on just how cinematic and kind of closer... It feels closer to like a classic adventure RPG. Think God of War or something like that.
Well, yeah, the visual spectacle for him was just amazing.
Yeah.
You know, halfway through when he gets these lightning wings and just starts flying and literally making it rain lightning.
Yeah, because at first when you meet him, his wings have been like cut off or torn off and he's like hobbled. But he's just this big fat dragon who's been spending eternity eating other dragons. Also, I love going up the mountain. As you go up the mountaintop, you are learning the history of the ancient dragons and Baal. And the whole thing is like these powerful ancient dragons, they get their sustenance from eating smaller bitch ass dragons. Dude, so fucking badass.
Well, and one of the neat things about Baal in general was that he like mortally wounded Placidusax.
Yeah.
And two of Placidusax's heads...
Who I didn't know until after I had already killed him, right? But yeah.
Two of his heads were still on Baal in that fight. They're like bit into his back.
Yeah.
So that's part of why Baal's all messed up, is because he fought Placidusax. And he was mortally he was wounded, but he still was able to like really do a number on Placidusax.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Baal was cool. And then number three, I'm going to go with the finger monster.
Oh, Metter?
Metter. Yeah. I love that quest line.
Yes, it was very cool.
Where you're this weird, you just go to this weird church and you meet this fucking weird, creepy priest guy who's like, follow the stars.
Yeah.
And he sends you to two of the coolest areas in the game at all.
The Finger Ruins?
The Finger Ruins.
I thought visually they were neat. I would have liked there to be a little bit more in that area.
Yeah, for sure.
But visually, yes.
I agree, yeah.
Although I did hate, oh my gosh, I hated
those stupid worms that trap you and summon other worms.
Sometimes you could go through that area and it wasn't too bad. Sometimes you went through that area and it was the worst.
Yeah. It's a tough little area.
You just get stunlocked continuously.
Yeah, it's a bit shitty. But yeah. I loved that. And then... And it has all this weird, like these weird horns you blow into and you don't know exactly what's going on until you actually, you get to drop below him and then you go to, what's her name again? Metter?
Metter, yeah. It's M-E-T-Y-R.
You get to go to Metter's arena, essentially.
Sure.
And it, once again, a really tough boss for me anyway, especially like... Such a tough boss where it's just so hard to not die immediately fighting it.
A creepy looking boss too.
And
like,
yeah, very well, the finger spiders are already very strange and unsettling.
Agreed.
And so it did a great job of kind of like taking that and just changing it, but still keeping that like unsettling feeling.
Yeah.
And the fingers are obviously lore wise, I think a really, really cool part of Elden Ring is the fingers.
Yeah, it's the fingers are very interesting because like they represent the greater will and kind of talk with them. And Metter gave birth to every single finger that's, you know, all the two fingers, I presume the three fingers.
Yeah.
Two, which do you think that there's more than one three fingers? Because there's multiple instances of two fingers. Through it. All of the Empyreans get their own two fingers, right? But you only see the three fingers once.
That's the
chaos,
like
the chaos frenzy. Ones, yeah. Right?
No, because I think that's an anomaly.
Okay.
And I think that's why it's like the chaos.
Gotcha.
Like the arbiter of chaos is the three fingers, mm-hmm. because I think it's an anomaly that was never supposed to exist.
Gotcha. Yeah, that's interesting. That's interesting.
So, yeah, so if I had to go top three bosses, those are probably my three.
Yeah.
Also, I think Radahn, I could take any one of those out because I really like the Radahn fight. I like how hard it is.
It was really tough.
It's really fucking tough.
Yeah. And that jump from phase one to phase two is really high.
Insane.
You know, like you spend a couple of run throughs on phase one and you're like, oh, okay, I got phase one. And then as soon as you hit phase three, at least for me, like the first time that I hit phase two, I'm sorry, not phase three. The first time I hit phase two, he just wiped me out immediately.
Yeah. And that's what he does.
Okay.
For most of the times I fought him, yeah. did that. Honestly, I did end up beating him, and some of it was luck. I'm not gonna lie.
Yeah.
A bit of it was luck. Cause not only and there kinda is three phases in the sense that once you get to like 30% health,
oh, sure.
there's the giant shooting star attack.
Uh-huh.
I only saw that twice.
Okay.
Cause the first time I died after, and then the second time is when I beat him.
Is when you beat him. You're talking about when he jumps up again and yeah. like vanishes for a little bit.
Does the huge, yeah.
Yeah.
So.
How do you feel about Radahn being the final boss? Like, what were your thoughts on that?
So weird. Because, so here's the, because basically Mikala, who's a boy,
uh-huh.
who's also kind of a girl. And certainly 100% a girl in the form that you meet him in this game.
With Saint Trina?
Yeah. Wait. Yeah. No, he's 100% a chick at that point. Because Mikala's like, I'm going to rise up to take Merica's place.
Yeah.
And you're going to be my consort.
But Saint Trina's the female form of him.
Well, what you see is attached to him in the second phase is definitely a chick.
Oh, well, no, that's male Mikala.
Well, I don't know. He seems like, pretty lady-ish.
He's very effeminate, 100%.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he's like, hey, brother, you're my brother, and guess what? You're going to bang me and be my king consort.
I don't know if consort means that in this specific version. He does definitely want Radahn to be his king consort.
They're definitely in love.
You think? I don't think Radahn has much to say about it, if I'm being honest.
Well, yeah, no. He got resurrected into somebody else's body.
Yeah.
It's fucking weird. All of it is weird.
The whole thing's strange. Yeah, I was disappointed,
dude,
with it being Radahn. When he was revealed as the boss, I'm like, oh, it's Radahn? Like, that seems like it came out of nowhere.
Okay, so in the base game, I think aside from the final fight, I think Radahn is generally kind of just considered to be the toughest fight. It is a very tough fight in the base game. The original Radahn fight.
Okay.
So it made sense to me because Radahn was kind of like, if you're talking about fucking Imperions and demigods, he's kind of the toughest. He's fucking...
Radahn was definitely, yeah.
He's a tough dude to have to fucking take down.
Sure.
So, to me, it kind of made sense because it was like, of course Mikala picks him to be, like, the consort and his champion because, like, nobody's fucking tougher than Radahn. And so I thought it was cool she, like, resurrected him in the lesser... demigod's being is Moog a demigod or
yeah
is
that, okay yeah, yeah. Moog because Moog was a kid of Merica and Godfrey
yeah so yeah it made sense to me. What fucked me up more though was after you beat Radahn
uh-huh
you get I forget if it's I think it's the equipment you get, it's like the head the like crown you
oh,
get
sure.
And there's
it's like Mikala's crown.
Or maybe it's the cutscene you get afterwards. I'm not sure. But in any case, it's like this piece where it's like there would have been peace for everybody. Like, that's the part that fucked me up. Was Mikola just wanted to be a good ruler and just wanted to create peace for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And you killed the shit out of him in Radahn.
Yeah, well, but that's where Mikola, to me, is a very interesting villain. Essentially, because that is what he wants, 100%.
Kind of like a Thanos-type character.
Yeah, but he discards all of his earthly flesh, which you're following, you know, the trail of Mikola.
Yeah.
But he also, he discards it, but his version of peace is like a version where people don't have free will. And that's something that is, even though it'd be peace, you know, peace on Earth.
I guess I didn't necessarily pick up on that. You know, yeah.
But think about what Mikola's power is.
I just thought about it. It's like after you kill him, you just get this thing where it's like, I just wanted everybody to be at peace. And it's like, fuck, I just killed this. I just killed that guy. Fuck, what's wrong with me?
Yeah. No, you did. Yeah, absolutely. And did he want peace? 100%. But at the same time,
it was at the cost of free will.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. And Mikola is okay with enchanting people. Well,
and honestly, I think villains with that kind of mindset are sometimes the most intriguing villains. Yeah.
Well, if you think about what Ansbach said after the whole enchantment had been broken, he's like, I went against Mikola. I thought that I would be able to at least like do some damage. Not a thing. He's a monster. Like, he goes, he's a monster, and even now, I want to run away in fear. He is terrifying, right? And it's because Mikola doesn't have to fight you. He just looks at you.
Just make you you his friend.
Yep. Yeah. And did you get converted when you fought Radahn?
No, I never actually got converted. I definitely got hit with it once or twice, but I never got hit with it the second time. Because you have to get hit with it twice, correct?
Yeah.
No, yeah. I did not get hit with it twice.
Yeah. So if you get hit with it twice, you get a gesture. Because when you get hit with it twice, you essentially bow to Mikola. And it says, heart stolen. And then you just lose all your life. And you're just praising him. And that's the end of the fight.
I actually only ever got hit with that attack one time.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Which I thought was really cool. Where it did like a cutscene. If you got hit with that attack, it just did a cutscene in the fight.
What do you mean by it did a cutscene in the fight?
It did a cutscene. If you got hit with that attack, at least the first time, when you get hit with that, it does like a little cutscene where you see Mikola on fucking Radahn's back and he's talking to you.
Like the camera angle changes and stuff?
I don't know 100%. I think so. Oh,
there definitely is like a little so there's like a little animation for sure. Is that what you mean?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Yeah. So for me, Radahn was very disappointing. Like, it was a good fight. I enjoyed the fight. Mechanically, I thought it was fun. It was a little bit bullshit. But that's what
it's a lot of bullshit.
But that's what you want, right? You want some bullshit in a major boss battle. You want it to feel...
It felt like a true accomplishment.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, I fucking hated it.
Yeah.
But when I beat it, it definitely felt like an accomplishment.
But through the whole fight, was thinking, why isn't this Godwin? Like, why isn't it Godwin? In the base game, there's all of this information that alludes to Godwin.
Godwin is the first Elden Lord, right?
Godwin is the who Rani killed in the Night of the Black Knives.
Yeah.
But he wasn't Elden Lord. He was just Merica's kid.
Okay.
But he was the one... He's like the cause of Deathroot, right? Like he's the destined death... Or not destined death. Like those who live in eternal death, right? Yeah. Like his body is dead, but his body is alive, but his soul is dead.
Yeah.
Whereas when Rani did that whole thing, she killed her body, but kept her soul alive.
Yes.
So... In that base game, there's a whole bunch about how Godwin and Mikola were close. And so I was thinking, if it's going to be anybody, it's going to be Godwin, right? And then we'd get to fight Godwin in a resurrected body because his soul was dead, right? Yeah. And that's the exact same thing that happened was Radahn's soul was put into Moog's body.
Yeah.
Right? So... I just feel like it would have made more, at least for me, it would have made more sense if they would have been, okay, let's pick Godwin and have him go into Moog's body. Because his soul was dead, but his body wasn't. Which is why Mikala would need a body to resurrect
Godwin. Yeah.
Right? So all of that just made sense to me. But then they went and picked Radahn. And then they went and... So I don't know if you looked at the item descriptions of Radahn's stuff after you defeated him.
Yeah.
But when Melania went down and marched to fight Radahn, she went down there to kill him so that he would go to the Shadowlands so that Mikala could do his thing.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, your promised lord awaits, or kindly Mikala awaits.
Yeah.
You know, that's what she whispered into him. So, like, okay, I guess. But me personally, I would have preferred it to be Godwin. I just feel like thematically that would have been cooler. We've already fought Radahn. Like,
agreed, yeah.
You know, I already know that Radahn was a badass. I get it. And I kind of liked the idea that the only reason that we were able to defeat Radahn in the base game was because he was so deteriorated by the Scarlet Rot and the madness of the Elden Ring being shattered that's why we were able to beat him.
Yeah. Well, and I think that a counterpoint to that would be like, that's why this boss fight was so much harder and why he was the final boss fight.
That's true, yeah.
Because he's 100% harder than fucking Radagon and the Elden Lord.
Yeah, I would agree. And I do think, too, when you normally fight Radahn, you're level, what, like 40, 50, somewhere in that range?
Yeah.
Versus fighting him at level 150 to 200?
Yeah.
So I get the scaling there. I get it. But I don't know, man.
They definitely had a... Here's my thought of why. Is not everybody who played through Elden Ring
mm-hmm.
played through it as many times and went as deep, because a lot of the Godwin lore, that's kind of like a quest you have to kind of go down through.
Sure.
So I think perhaps that decision was made because Radahn is a boss that pretty much everybody fights.
Mm-hmm. So everybody would have that aha moment.
Yeah, and everybody is familiar with how much of a badass he is and what.
Okay.
Whereas a lot of the Godwin stuff is like through that Fia quest line, you have to find the deep root depths, which are tough to find.
Yeah.
Unless you're like, look it up, or are one of those people who really look into every corner of every inch of the map.
Sure. Okay, I guess, because then maybe
so
it would be like...
So that's why.
Yeah, maybe it would be like a big reveal then, right? And be like, oh man, it's Godwin, but not all of the people who...
Yeah, somebody who played, like me on the first playthrough, I'd be like, who the fuck is Godwin?
Yeah.
Because on my first playthrough, I didn't know who the fuck Godwin was.
That's an interesting thought, that maybe that's why it happened. Maybe. I don't know. For me... I was like, Godwin would have been the one to do.
I actually hearing you describe why you think it should be, I 100% agree. I think that definitely would be, for lore people, I think that's a much better selection.
Yeah.
So also with bosses, probably my biggest... So here's the things I love about the DLC
mm-hmm.
is you get some... Because I want to be fair and talk about some of the shit I did not like specifically. And like criticism that I have specifically. Yeah. The things I did like, though, is I'll run down through them real quick. You get fucking smithing stones in bulk and all over the place, which I think is something they should have done in the base game initially.
Okay.
Where most people kind of have this similar experience where you find one good, like, special weapon that gets upgraded with somber stones
mm-hmm.
and then you just stick with that one, because it's so much easier to just find one somber stone of the level you need and keep leveling it up, and they're really good. So I think a lot of times the regular weapons that get regular smithing stones are overlooked, especially on your first playthrough, because it's just tough to find six, or you need 12 for each
level of somber stone.
Level of stone,
yep. To level up a standard weapon.
So you get bulk. Yeah. You get a lot of fucking stones to level up all the cool weapons you find. So awesome, great upgrade.
Sure.
For the game. You get the new inventory
tab. That thing.
That shows you new items. Great. because there's so much in Elden Ring and there's so much to read.
Yeah.
It's great being able to just pop open your inventory and see exactly what you just found, mm-hmm. read the lore behind it, read what it does, see is like this something I'm going to use or right. useful. And I like the new enemies.
Okay.
Now to the criticism, there's not enough new enemies.
Okay. For me. Yeah.
I feel like a lot of times there were, because basically the new enemies you get, the weird bird guys that are really tough, you encounter one right away, like they do the,
oh,
like
those,
grab you
those
and,
weird dancers, like yeah, with the discs.
Yeah, fucking Rey Mysterio Jr.
Yeah, the ascetics, I think they're called the ascetics or something like that, but yeah, they're rough.
They're cool. The worms in the finger ruins.
Yeah.
They're pretty cool.
Yeah.
And tough.
Mm-hmm.
And the fire knights. In the storehouse, you see a lot of them.
Yeah, the Mesmer Knights.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I did not care for them.
But aside from that, there and then I guess the like the ogres.
Yeah,
you'd call them the like big, the smithing like, guys.
Uh huh.
Yeah.
Oh, sure. Like the stone golems. Is that what you're talking about? Yeah. So there's the stone golems. There are like the when you said ogre, I thought about the ones that were like blood related. Who?
Oh yeah,
were,
those
like,
guys too.
So there's them, and then there are also the like the little deathrite birds, the little ones,
yes,
like the stone ones. The
those things are pretty easy to kill right away. And also, you get like the base wieners, the black, like shadowy black.
Oh, sure.
People who like, I probably shouldn't say black people. Like the,
they're
like kind of
like
the standard wieners that you find throughout the base game. But
yeah,
they're
like
shadowy.
The Putty Patrol.
They're black and like shadowy. Yeah.
Yeah.
I would have liked more like common base enemies
that were a little bit different.
Yeah, because there are a lot of times like when you go to America's place, mm-hmm. you just find there's a couple of just Urtree.
Oh, the Sentinels?
The Urtree Sentinels.
Yeah.
Like
I thought it was interesting to have them there because it kind of felt like they were guarding that area.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, and then thematically, you're like, why is an Urtree Sentinel here?
Exactly. Yeah.
But then you find out, oh, they're there because it's America's home.
Yeah. So I don't know. And you run into a couple of the ulcerated tree spirits.
Yeah. Those giant worm things.
Yeah. And I don't know. There was just a couple of times where I was like, I feel like there could have been more just basic enemies.
Okay.
So
yeah,
it felt like they put a lot into the world.
Mm-hmm.
And then they kind of got to like enemies and they're like, I don't know, some worm guys.
Would you
I
think
guess
about
that stunlock you?
Yeah. What'd you think about the like those Everjail stone spheres that are worms?
Oh yeah, that actually and they're like
and
turrets.
They snipe you? Yeah.
Oh, those fucking things were assholes,
yeah,
dude.
Yeah, that was
fuck that.
That area was that was a little rough.
Honestly, maybe they could have put those in more areas too.
Sure.
Because you only find them when you're doing the Thalia quest when you jump down to mm-hmm. like the sleep catacombs.
Yeah.
So that's one criticism. And then probably my biggest criticism is of the boss fights.
Mm-hmm.
Especially the ones you get remembrances from. I feel like a lot of them are forgettable.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. And I feel like they kind of did this thing where they just came up with a formula where they're like, okay, we're going to do this with all the bosses. They're all super aggressive.
Yeah.
And they all have these big area of effect attacks that are really hard to dodge.
Yeah.
And that's what our bosses will be. Where it felt like...
Okay.
Where that's why I liked Bale and I liked Metter and I liked Mesmer because I felt like all of them cinematically were really cool.
Okay.
Where a lot of basically all the rest of them just felt hard to beat, where they were just aggressive and had really good attacks, which is cool. Like, yeah, you want that. But also when you're fighting bosses, you also want a bit of a cinematic like element to it. That makes it feel special.
Yeah.
Whereas, because if you think about the base game, you get fucking Radahn, who's riding on a pony, and you get...
That's a very specific boss fight, right? Like, it's
Radahn,
very unique.
Yeah, he's riding on a pony, you get to summon all these people, which, mm-hmm. you know, because he's so tough, you need a bunch of people to be able to beat him.
Yeah.
You get Rennala, who, sure. like, has this second phase where she takes you to an entirely different fucking world. Like, the first part is a puzzle. It's mm-hmm. not just a boss. It's a puzzle.
Sure, because you got to find the little, like, whatever those
Yeah, the guy shooting the books at you.
Yeah.
Ricard, where you don't necessarily need the special weapon you find in his chamber.
Makes a whole lot easier, though.
It helps it a lot. And mm-hmm. also, it's just a really, also kind of a puzzle, because you got to figure out, how the fuck do I attack this guy when he's surrounded by lava?
Yeah.
Spoiler alert, you just run through the lava. It doesn't hurt that much. And then you just spam attacks at him. It's actually one of the easiest fights in the game.
I see what you're getting at, though.
So I the Elden Lord and Radagon, like all those fights felt really cinematic mm-hmm. and interesting.
And they felt different from each other.
Exactly. Whereas in the DLC, they felt really tough.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of them, they just didn't feel that particularly interesting.
Okay. I could see that.
I think Commander Gale did, to an extent.
Is that the guy on the warthog? He was a
because
bitch.
It's a bit, you're in a big open area and you got a boss on this big warthog that's fighting you. So it felt a little interesting, but still, I don't know. It just, a lot of them just felt, they felt really tough, just not particularly interesting.
Yeah, so I think that part of that has to do with how the narrative was presented to us in the DLC. And here's why I think that. I think that the DLC bosses were built a little bit around having to fight multiple enemies, that being you and other summons.
Yeah.
Because the DLC really focuses on the plot line of all of these characters that you're kind of following the steps of Mikula with.
Yeah.
And then they can show up on a lot of the main bosses or a lot of the bosses.
Yeah, way more than in the base game.
As
sure.
summons to bring in to fight. And that's part of some of their storylines is using them as summons. For example, the Egon, the guy that you bring in for Bale.
Yeah.
Right? So that's part of the storyline. And I think that they counted on people bringing them in to a lot of the fights. And so since the boss now has to focus on multiple people, it would have those big area of effects to keep it challenging, I think.
Yeah.
That would be my guess, just mechanically, as to why a lot of them have that. But you are correct. They are much more aggressive in the DLC than they are. You know, think about Melania. When you go in and fight her, she's just slowly walking towards you for a good, you know, 15 seconds. It's real menacing, but it does let you have time to, like, pop off all your buffs and stuff.
That was one of my complaints about the final boss, Radahn.
Oh, dude, he just jumps right in.
He jumps, a lot of times he jumps right in.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, that's kind of fucked up in that they're like, okay, we make this whole mechanic, the spirit ashes, which is a big part of fighting bosses throughout all of Elden Ring. And they're like, okay, here's this boss.
Sure.
And you don't even get a chance to summon your spirit.
They make it so that you have to find an opening.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. To do
and,
it.
And to me, that felt kind of like just like a cheap trick where it's like, why even offer the ability to summon a spirit if.
Yeah.
Not. But also there are times where he doesn't just jump in right away. So you can like.
Yeah. Most of the time he does. But it is like one
probably
out of
about 75% of the time. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I can see that.
It was one of my complaints. But also I was salty because I was just losing to him over and over again.
Sure.
So maybe I was just a little bit pissed at that point.
I felt the same way.
That's quite possible.
Yeah. I felt the same way about.
Like, it's not fair. I can't beat him.
I felt the same way about R'lana. Like, when I fought her, she was an eye-opener for me.
Dude, she is tough.
Yeah, like, she's the person that I was like, man, they made this DLC really tough.
By the time I ended up going back to her, I was a little bit over-leveled.
Okay.
So, it still took me probably about 10 tries.
Yeah.
But still, yeah, no, she's tough.
Well, she's the reason that I was like,
and
okay.
I liked R'lana's storyline. I liked that Rinala had. Although I don't love the names.
Sure, R'lana and Rinala.
Yeah, that's
kind of reverse the L's and the N's. Yeah.
But her weapon, I mean, you and I play together. I loved her weapon you get.
Sure.
But also, I just thought it was kind of cool that she was like Rinala's sister, who was, instead of being a dork that studies books and magic, she's like, I'm fucking cutting shit up.
Yeah.
With two
she's
swords.
Much tougher. Yeah.
Yeah.
As far as like physically, just a warrior rather than a mage.
Yeah, exactly. Like basically you have the scholar mm-hmm. and the warrior.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, dude. Well, as far as, I mean, we could go on. I could talk a whole other hour about this thing.
Yeah, for sure.
I think that probably, though, maybe we reach a point where we kind of wrap it up and throw a final, you know what, scale of 1 to 20 shadow tree fragments or skidoo tree fragments.
Yeah, where it's definitely skidoo tree.
Where do you rate this DLC?
I'm going to go 20 out of 20.
Yeah.
Like, my complaints were, I think they're valid and I stand by them, but did it change how much I loved it? No, it was incredible. I got to re-experience discovering stuff in Elden Ring.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a real challenge again, which once again, once you get to late game and once you've played through the game a few times, it still has that magic, but like,
it's not the same.
It's just lessened because you've gotten better. You know how things work. So it's like it introduced a new learning curve.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it hits everything it needs to hit. It does everything it should be. I love that they made the story more linear and made all the extra stuff where you have to like read into. 20 out of 20.
Yeah.
Skidoo 20 out of 20 Skidoo tree fragments all day, every day.
Yeah, I'm trying to find a reason to not give it 20. Like, but even if I don't give it 20, it's going to be 19, right? Like,
yeah,
I'm right there with you.
That's where I was when I killed Radahn.
Yeah.
Can I actually tell? So I was at 17 Skidoo tree level.
Okay.
When I first tried fighting Radahn.
Okay.
And I was like, okay, let me try and like, maybe if I boost my Skidoo tree fragments and the level, it'll help me.
Mm-hmm.
So I finally ended up looking up like, where do I find them?
Yeah.
And found a list of where you can find them in all the map fragments. And so I found 6 more.
Okay.
And then I got to 19. And at that point I was looking through the list and I'm like, I don't know what I've done and what I haven't done.
Sure.
So I'm just going with 19. Yeah. I'm not trying to find 3 more.
Yeah. That might be my biggest complaint about it, is that the amount of Shadow Tree fragments there are for you to reach level 20 of the Shadow Tree Blessing are exact. You need 50 Shadow Tree fragments. There are 50 Shadow Tree fragments in the DLC. I think if they would have made 55, so
give you a little bit of wiggle room.
On that, I think I might have liked that a little bit more. And I think that it would have been, I don't know, I think I would have liked it a little bit more as far as exploration, because as much as I enjoyed getting all the smithing stones, I'm right there with you.
Yeah.
I think that if 5 of those smithing stones were taken away and I found 5 other Shadow Tree fragments, I think I'd have been happier.
Sure. Yeah, because they do that with the other stuff, with the golden seeds.
Oh yeah.
There are more golden seeds than you need in the game.
Yeah.
So yeah, no, I think that's pretty fair. Yeah. Because there is a point where exploration is fun, but there is also a point where it says, hey, you have to explore everything.
Yes.
Like you don't have an option if you want to if you want to reach the end of how strong you can make yourself.
Yeah. And it seems almost counterintuitive, because I would say that for the rest of Elden Ring, like, they are fine with you missing things.
Exactly. Yeah.
Like, they make entire areas of the map that are just a blip. Like,
yeah,
like,
dude, like I said, I've played through the games 5 times,
right?
And I'm sure there is still stuff I haven't done or haven't found.
Yeah. So I find it interesting that with the DLC, they go, oh, okay, actually, we're only going to put the right amount of things in so that you have to explore and you have to try and find everything in the DLC, rather than allowing you to miss things.
Yeah.
Right? Where the rest of the game, they were totally fine if you didn't go to the deep root depths and find the dragon down there.
Yeah.
You know? So I'm going to, you know what? I'm going to say 19. All right. Does that mean that I didn't love this? I loved this DLC.
You know, I'll agree with your 19.
Yeah. I loved this DLC.
Take my complaints into account with your complaints and the minor that they are all together. Yeah. 19.
Absolutely minimal. Right.
Could they have made it a little bit better? Sure.
Sure. Yeah.
Do we deserve it? Probably not.
Does it change the fact that I put probably another 70 hours into this DLC by itself?
No.
I loved this thing, right? Like, it was great. It's absolutely great. I'm bummed that there's not going to be another DLC.
Wait, what?
Yeah, that's it. They're done with
Elden Ring 2, though?
I hope so. So Miyazaki has come out and said that he is almost like passing the torch, where he's going to let other people in FromSoft start to make games. But as far as Elden Ring itself, done. Now, could they make Elden Ring 2? Maybe. They'd be a fool fiscally to not make Elden Ring 2. It's given them so much money.
Yeah.
But also, they don't really seem to care about that, right? Like, they made Dark Souls, and it was super abrasive and clunky, and it's kind of a phenomenon that Elden Ring is as popular as it is. So, we'll see. But as far as Elden Ring, they're not going to make another DLC. Like, this is it.
Aww.
All right?
There's still so much lore to go through.
I know.
There's still so much more they could do with it.
Yeah, because lore-wise, they added more questions, too. They resolved some things, but then they also gave more speculation, or gave more things that we just need to speculate about. So anyway, crew, where do you think? We were kind of gushing for a little bit. This is a little bit longer of an episode. I hope that's okay. But where do you stand with Shadow of the Erdtree? 19 out of 20 Shadow Tree fragments, or Skidoo Tree fragments, if you're feeling a little frisky. On our end, where do you guys land? With that specifically, I want to know the people in the Shadowlands. That's right. You know where that is. If you're listening from the Shadowlands, you got to get a hold of us. You got to find us on Instagram. You got to find us on Threads. You got to send us an email. You got to find us on Facebook. Thor, what's the email that they can get a hold of us at?
GetWreckedPod@gmail.com. That's GitRecedPod@gmail.com.
That's right. Send us an email. Let us know what you think. Give us a recommendation. I would love to play another game. Me personally, I'm probably going to jump into Sekiro next. That's probably my next thing.
I think I want to try Bloodborne. You've talked about it so many times.
In that case, I'm going to jump into Bloodborne again.
Yeah. So I don't know if I can download it on PlayStation, but hopefully I can. Because I would like to play Bloodborne.
Yeah, you can absolutely download it on PlayStation.
Maybe if I don't decide to play through a new game plus of
Elden Ring
with my new faith build.
You let me know when you're ready for Bloodborne, and I will be there. I'll make a new character and go through Bloodborne.
All right, right on.
All right, folks. So there you go. Actually, next week. What are we going to be getting into,
Thor? I think
Thor?
It's your recommendation. I don't know if you counted this one as yours, because this was something we were both always going to play.
Well, then.
I didn't necessarily count this as your recommendation.
Oh,
so.
Okay. Well,
if you want it to be, it can be. I don't have one prepared. It seems like you don't either, so
yeah, I
we
don't.
Can figure it out.
You know what? Have you seen Kubo and the Two Strings?
No.
That's going to be my recommendation for you. It is a.
But it's like an animated film about a kid that plays like a lute.
Yep.
Like an Asian inspired lute of
yep.
some sort.
Yep.
I'm aware of it. I've never seen it.
No. Okay. Then that's what you're going to watch.
All right, Kubo and the Two Strings.
Kubo and the Two Strings. It is a stop-motion animation film.
Ooh, cool.
And it's actually really, really awesome.
All right.
So I just thought of that off the top of my head. It's actually really, really good. If you haven't seen it, you should see it.
All right, let's roll with it.
All right, then next week, Kubo and the Two Strings is what we're going to get into. I don't know if it's streaming anywhere, folks, so you can find it, I'm sure. We believe in you.
Isn't it like a Disney movie?
It's not Disney.
Okay.
Yeah, it's not Disney.
Not on Disney Plus then, probably.
Yep. But you guys will be able to find it. We have a very intelligent audience, I believe. Yeah. We agree on everything, I think. As diverse as our audience.
Bunch of dumbasses. No, I disagree. They're a bunch of dumbasses.
Well, that's it for us, folks. As always, folks.
Nope.
Until next time.
As always.
I'll get it one of these days. You get wrecked out there. And please come back.
And stay wrecked. And you're not a dumbass. I love you.
Yep. All right. Now we can continue to talk about Elden Ring. Not on the podcast.
We'll just turn off the recorder and we'll keep talking about it.